Welcome to Busy Research, the podcast where business meets data and insights drive success. I'm your host, Vicki McCarthy, Director of the Center for Applied Business Research at Austin Peay State University. On this podcast, we get busy learning about how applied business research can improve business decision making. Welcome to another episode of Busy Research. I'm your host, Vicki McCarthy, and today we have a special guest joining us, Dr. Kelvin Rutledge. Dr. Rutledge is a distinguished graduate of Austin Peay State University, a former honor student in the APSU's President's Emerging Leadership Program, is here with us today to talk about institutional inclusivity and change management. He is the Associate Vice President for Institutional Inclusive Strategies and Change Management at Southern Connecticut State University, and he's here to share his insight on leading change in the pursuit of greater inclusivity. Welcome to the show, Dr. Rutledge.
Hello, hello, and thank you so much for providing the space and this opportunity.
So, Kelvin, can you share with our listeners what inspired your journey and ultimately led you to your current role?
Absolutely. So when I think about my journey, it's very multifaceted. So I always like to say my career journey actually started in fast food. So my first employment opportunity back in 2006 was with Arby's Restaurant Group. They truly do have the meats. And so worked my way up from, you know, thinking that part-time employee to that team trainer to an entry-level manager. To really taking in some pieces of the kind of experience, whether that's team member training and development, working with the general manager to think about schedules and food ordering and local store management, and really taking a liking to the experience. And while that was happening, I was simultaneously attending Austin Peay State University as a student. And so I had a great opportunity to engage in programs like the President's Emerging Leadership Program, do online education. And so was having some great, you know, intersections of learning, leadership, learning, connectivity, humanity, and belonging, while also really working in an ongoing environment where things change every day. I worked for Arby's for about 5.5 years, and there comes a point sometimes where you recognize that may say curly fries and shakes just aren't for the long term. And I ended, I'd say, in higher education kind of by a happy accident. I had some experiences through the Division of Student Affairs and the Division of Enrollment Management and Academic Support at Austin Peay. And I had the opportunity for people to encourage me to consider what could a career in higher education look like. And so from those encouragement pieces, had the opportunity to apply to graduate programs in higher education and student affairs administration, and ultimately landed at Florida State University. I was very grateful to have an opportunity that exposed me to a variety of experiences, but I really found that my niche was career development services. So working with students as they navigate their career decision-making, trying to find opportunities for connection and community, and then most importantly, transition out of the institution in a way that the success is defined for them. And so with that, I worked at Florida State, the University of Georgia, and Southern Connecticut State University in a variety of over a decade in career services. Along the way, had an opportunity to complete my doctoral work in higher education administration, serve in professional associations and leadership opportunities, and really kind of connected in a variety of ways to doing not only working with students, but faculty and staff, external constituents and community and nonprofit organizations around a variety of topics. So career development was the full-time gig, right? But still doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work, thinking about strategic planning and strategic change management. And all of those experiences really led me to my current role at Southern Connecticut State University, serving as that Associate Vice President for Institutional Inclusive Strategies and Change Management. And so I think when I come as a collective, it's the summation of all of those little experiences coming together in a way to offer learning and growth and development that I'm very fortunate for.
Wow, that's a great story. And I love how you connect all of the pieces together on your journey. And you've traveled, it sounds like, the whole Eastern seaboard there from Florida State all the way up to Southern Connecticut. Can you share with us any significant milestones or and or challenges you've encountered along the way?
Absolutely. So I think one of the things that is a very strong theme throughout all of my experiences is walking into either professional experiences where either I am the first or the second person to navigate the position. And so when I think about my position, say at Florida State, I was half-time in employer relations, half-time in experiential learning. So navigating what did it look like to operate in two separate spaces. Within the University of Georgia, I was working in a position that was connected to a fairly new initiative surrounding experiential learning for all students as a requirement for graduation. And at Southern Connecticut State, within my first position, the Director of Career and Professional Development, it was a brand new position to help build a new centralized career development center for an institution serving about 8,800 students. And so within all of those experiences, what does it mean to think through, to navigate the gray and being comfortable, and I have skills and capacities to navigate that change in that gray space, but also being open to hearing people's perspective and understanding kind of decisions that kind of made what I'm experiencing in real time. So just kind of becoming more knowledgeable about how to be comfortable in that ambiguity, that gray space, and ultimately understanding how I can be a great kind of experience. I think the second milestone I highlight is this ability to balance full-time professional work with being an engaged doctoral student. And so I think navigating working at Florida State and the University of Georgia while also doing doctoral coursework and thinking about the dissertation process and really taking an opportunity to do a different type of dissertation that really looked at Career Development Center employees and really thinking about organizational socialization of those employees. And so that kind of conversational piece of oftentimes when we think about individuals who engage the higher education and student affairs piece, they're thinking about the student experience. Well, I was really focused on the employee experience and I wanted to learn more about that capacity. And so really thinking about the ways I'm showing up in my scholarly lens of kind of research and scholarship, but also still connecting it to the very practical role and kind of navigating how do you balance the both and work being high intense, high impact, but also scholarship that's high intense, high impact as well. And thinking about what that can be leveraged in. I think the final milestone I kind of named, I'll name in this space is that I have the opportunity in one of the professional associations that I volunteered with, serving as their annual convention chair. So in 2020, an association I'm a member of, ACPA, College Student Educators International, hosts an annual convention, and I served as the chair of their 2020 convention in Nashville. And so it was an opportunity to lead a team of over 30 volunteers from across the United States and Canada to think about what does it mean to create this holistic and intentional professional development experience for over 2,000 higher educational professionals. And so the space of learning and growth of inviting people who are in graduate school to people who serve in senior level positions on their institution and inviting us all to consider how do we want to work together and how do we build something so that people can experience in community together. And so I've just been very fortunate to have these moments or these opportunities that are very challenging in practice, but provide a lot of growth and reward at the end.
And it sounds like they have all led you to this position that you're in right now when you talk about socialization and engagement of employees there and inclusivity. We hear a lot about now in research and as far as fostering employee engagement within organizations and that idea that when employees feel like they're included and respected and valued, that they are more engaged and have a sense of belonging. Can you talk about employee engagement and your role at Southern Connecticut State University?
Absolutely. So I think for me, I have the privilege of serving as an associate vice president. So I work with a phenomenal team of practitioners and professionals who are doing day-to-day work that I get to supervise. And then in some spaces and places, really think about co-collaborating and co-leading and co-executing with them. So when I think about the employee engagement lifecycle, right, I think one of the things that, or one of the areas that I supervise is faculty and staff diversity, recruitment, and retention. And so really thinking about in what ways as an institution, if we're thinking about hiring a diverse workforce across all levels of the institution, In what ways are we thinking about advertising and marketing and doing intentional outreach to engage communities that may have not considered higher education as an employment pathway for them? Or how do we help dispel myths or rumors to invite them to consider that you have the requisite skills to apply for positions? And then not only recruiting them to positions, but also if they are so forth hired, how do we really pay attention to the way that they are retained in terms of their growth, their learning, their development, and helping them navigate the kind of spaces that we have co-created here at the institution? I think another area that's really important is the orientation and onboarding experience. So members of the division are collaborating in our new employee orientation experience. And so, you know, obviously we do the day-to-day compliance pieces that everybody has to happen. You know, that's the cornerstone of the work. But oftentimes we frame compliance as the floor. It's where we have to start, but not where we have to go. And so really inviting people to think about, as you enter a new space and orient into the institution, your division, into your role, how do you find community? How do you understand all of these systems and organization and intersections? But then more importantly, how do we really talk about the humanizing of experiences and allow people to share what they're bringing into spaces and how they make the most sense? I think a lot of my day-to-day work is really around, as we think about supervision and educational training and development, really naming explicitly what are the pathways for engagement and how do we provide opportunities. Whether some people, they need those one-time educational experiences because they're looking for targeted training and development, versus some people need curricular sustained approaches to really wrap their minds around kind of changing systems and environments and processes. And then finally, thinking about just how do we continue to think about encouraging our mid and senior level managers at the institution about the ways that we're building future leadership and ultimately building the bench so that if the day and place and space comes to thinking about retirement or transition out of the university, that one, we feel like we have a workforce that can fill the interim needs to keep us going, but then two, prepare people that if it is a desire to aspire to leadership, that we provided the requisite skills and opportunities to do so.
And you mentioned changing processes, and part of your title is actually change management. So we know that change management is complex. You said also that you've been the first in many of your positions. So I imagine that with that came trying to change a lot of processes. But I would really like to kind of expand on that more, if you don't mind. Can you tell me some of the strategies that you use currently in your position to help with change?
Absolutely. So I will talk through two kind of really frameworks that I use that I think have been really helpful for me when thinking about change management. So I'm named, my graduate degrees are in higher education with an emphasis on student affairs administration. And so one of the frameworks that I use, D. Scott Tharp, he's a social worker by training, but does a lot of college student affairs training and development work. And he uses a framework that's called the cultural competency matrix, and really invites individuals to think about multiple domains of experience. So oftentimes we think about the intrapersonal and interpersonal capacities of kind of organizations, right? The people focus. And I think it's really important to name that when we think about strategies around change, that the intrapersonal, the way that we are reflecting on our values, our biases, the ways that in our opinions and perspectives, really kind of refining and how are we being open and transparent about that? But then the interpersonal is right. So how do we build relationships if we have context and we have framings that then come into conversations? How are we clear in communicating that? There's a second level of kind of understanding organizational kind of capacities, the processes, the policies, the procedures, the overall engagements. And then there's the environmental, right? Thinking about kind of the landscape of how all of these systems kind of interact and engage. And I think part of what the matrix invites us to do is being clear to one, how do we want to understand where we're impacting change, right? So if I'm trying to make impact or change on the environmental level, that needs to look different from the change and impact I'm making on the interpersonal level. So being able to have a schema or a framework to really understand how I'm going to show up in those capacities for change is really important. And then second, most importantly, based on the level of impact that I want to happen, if it's interpersonal or organizational or environmental, do I have the requisite skills or perspective to make the impact on that change? So now we're thinking about training to really thinking about facilitating processes to make change. Do I have the cultural capital? Do I have the political power? Do I have kind of those instances to really make it work? And so one of, I think I'm really emphasizing with the cultural competency matrix here is being able to use that as the kind of a check-in tool for me to understand if I want to make change or if I want to make impact, where am I really trying to understand and connect with the change? And how do I help communicate that to those who may be in relationship with me as well? I think the second framework that I use, and this is very like higher education theory, like not higher education specific, but Paulo Freire's pedagogy of love. And so one of the things about pedagogy of love is that it invites us to really thinking about how do we see people as healthy, whole, full human beings, while also acknowledging that love is critical and love is focused, right? And so when we think about change collectively, I think it's really important for us to see the humanity of people and the processes and see how they show up. And as we communicate, as they're meaning making, as they articulate what they see and create the space where people feel comfortable for that. But then also giving opportunity to be critical and evaluative in the ways that change is happening within organizations. So I think for me, when I think about change, I try to integrate both a little bit of theoretical framework that people can see themselves in, but also a practical application of strategies that allows people to have clarity and grounding so that when we talk about holistic change, whether it's a process or an environmental change, people can see themselves in a way that can make sense in the way that they want to choose to show up to me.
Wow, I love that. And I love the idea when you're talking about the pedagogical love of treating people as in a holistic way. And you mentioned that, you know, change is difficult. And so how do you navigate when there is resistance to change and foster the buy-in from your stakeholders?
Absolutely. So I think of a three-step model for me individually. So step one is TNT, what I like to call it. You have to build trust and transparency to navigate resistance. So trust in the sense that you have to create a container that if there is resistance, that one, that you have an opportunity to name the resistance as what's contributing to it. And that more importantly, too, that you've created a container or a space that people can say it, but you'll also hear it, right? So listening to understand, not listening to critique. And then I think the transparency part, like, right? I think oftentimes when we talk about change, it's very nebulous. It's very kind of why are we doing the change? And so transparency being clear about what led us to a point that we needed to a change. How do we want to engage a change process? And what is the ultimate goal or outcome? I think oftentimes resistance comes from a lack of clarity and a lack of communication. And so that invitation to build trust and transparency, again, brings us back to the personhood of the people that may be outwardly presenting resistance to you. Second, I think it's about understanding if we want to invite people into a change process, what is their capacity to do, but also their ability to do. And so I frame this from two ways. Some people are phenomenal thought partners. They love to ideate. They love to really critically evaluate and bring into spaces. And so for some people, that is the way that you bring them in to really hear, to kind of think through. Versus on the opposite end of the spectrum for me, some people are great doers. So once you have decided and made a decision and we need to move to an action plan, how do you really make the steps and build the product, right? I think part of navigating resistance is providing a menu of options to have the people see them part of the change management process and allow people to self-select in a way that makes the most sense. But then once people self-select in, how are you affirming and acknowledging their contributions along the way? And so building that capacity for people to be about the process is critically important. And then third, I think ultimately, and what has created resistance for those that may have been part of an organization previously and are saying that, oh, here's another change process, is that we don't close communication loops, right? So if we name that we started this process, How do we conclude? How do we communicate that we've concluded a process? How do we communicate that we've reached our goals or objectives? And how are we going to communicate to say that this is what success looks like moving forward? I think oftentimes stakeholders want to see organizations succeed, but they can only see what they've been communicated to, right? And so we have to invite them into consistent and ongoing communication for them to really see themselves as part of a holistic process. And so for me, I think those three steps are really critical and have to be interwoven throughout a process so that people see that not only did we hear any kind of contradictory or negative perspectives, but we've also made an attempt and an effort to involve people in the process. Now, you can do all of these three things, and some people will still kind of come into the space and say, like, well, I still don't want to do it. And that's okay. But at least you have provided space and opportunity for collaboration to really make it happen.
Right. And you have some very practical approaches that sound like doable for most organizations, if they can take the time to, like you said, communicate, and the trust and transparency are very important for change and bringing people in. But looking ahead, Kelvin, what do you envision for the future of inclusivity within organizations at your own place and then other organizations?
Such a big question. I love it. So there's three things that really come to my mind. So one, what does it really mean to nurture and grow leadership around intergenerational workplaces? And so as our workforce becomes more containers of multiple generational experiences being present, more generational opinions about how things should be run, how we allocate our human, fiscal, and organizational resources, for those who step into leadership or positions that have impact to people and change management processes, how do we really adapt our styles to begin to think of holding all of the truths of these generations and what they're seeking? And more importantly, allow them to see themselves in comfortable and holistic ways. And so when I say that, I mean, I'm really beginning to honor for those who are on the verge of retirement that may have been in the workforce for 40 or 50 years, the way that they respect to power and hierarchy and structure and authority may look very different for someone who's entering the workforce who may be a Gen Z identified employee, and anyone and everyone in between, right? And so as we think about that, how we were providing space for them to name how they see things, how do we affirm what's great? How do we conversationally coach those that are not and provide spaces to meet in the middle? And so how do we consistently invite those conversations? I think the second thing, as we think about the future of inclusivity, is really navigating what does it mean to have a holistic understanding of identity and its intersections. And so oftentimes, as we think about as our culture and society becomes more diverse, more holistic, more global, the ongoing conversations oftentimes sit at the intersections of individual identities and perspectives, but also organizational or environmental expectations, with also societal norms and expectations. And so a sophistication that allows us to sit in the fullness of our world, that the individual experiences coupled with societal expectations, coupled with the organizational experiences, are just a lot to hold for everyone on a day-to-day. And so the future of inclusivity is really thinking about how do we hold that entire spectrum in a way that can be beneficial to all of the employees within the organization and ultimately can contribute to the success of the organization as a whole. And then finally, when I think about the future of inclusivity, it's really going to think about how do we really name succession planning in an inclusive and forward-thinking way. One of the things I'm really sitting with in my place and space, and I've been sitting this with a couple of years, is that we have a significant amount of workforce, and this is me in the higher education space, who will retire within the next 3 to 7 years. One, how do we honor their contributions and the ways that they've offered and invested in our spaces? But then two, how do we begin to name and build pathways that allows for people from a variety of backgrounds, cultures, and identities to see themselves in these positions of authority, positions of power, and positions of influence that creates a different kind of chart and charting of a journey But then most importantly, how do we help support them in navigating their and understanding their experience, right? So whether you identify from a historically marginalized community or not, that capacity to kind of understand and build relationship and continuity and community matters. And so I think all of these three things are going to uniquely intersect in a way that can be beneficial to those who are involved. And I think for those who have an aspiration to think about leadership, who want to manage change and who want to control or contribute to environments, rather, you're going to have to think more critically about these things. And I think people can always have the capacity to do better and be better. Even though I have a PhD after my name and I do this work, I still have so much to learn, right? And so that invitation to really sitting with what is our ongoing learning, what is our ongoing development, and really striving for the sense that inclusivity has to be a long-term strategic initiative that's also grounded in the people that we serve as employees.
Wow. And it was a big question I threw at you, Kelvin, and you did a fabulous job addressing it. It sounds to me like we have at least three more podcasts in there around each of your questions, because those are big topics, and I love it. So, but before we wrap up today, do you have any final advice that you want to share with our listeners?
Sure. I think two things. For one, I really want to continue stressing the way that we can even begin to think about humanizing our employment experiences and the employee experience of companies and organizations will be a thriving topic of conversation for the forthcoming time to come, right? And so inviting this piece of how do we see people as whole people with multiple intersecting identities, multiple contexts, multiple stressors, both inside and outside of work, and how do we allow people to hold their truth as true? That's going to be a critical opportunity that I think people will have to wrestle with if they want to aspire to leadership. I think the second thing to offer is that if anyone is wanting to do change management through an inclusive, equitable lens, it really, you have to invite yourself to thinking about what does it mean to truly be a lifelong learner. I always often say that there's so many terms, concepts, ideas that it's people that are exposing me to things that I have to continue to go back and read an article, listen to a podcast, or do something different in ways that makes most sense. And sometimes that may mean I have to go read literature or read experience things that are I have no knowledge of, or I may be in somewhat conflict with. I think the conflict or the lack of knowledge is so critical to how we discern and have broader and bigger scopes of understanding. And so I would invite people to continue to think about how are you continuing to learn? How are you continuing to take information that challenges what you think is true or what you think is to be normal? And how do we continue to meaning make and communicate that to those that we are in deep relationship or collaboration with? As I think that is going to continue to influence and impact relationships.
Very wise words, Kelvin. I think that that's great advice. I thank you so much for sharing your valuable insights with us today. It has been a pleasure having you on Busy Research. Where can our listeners learn more about you and your work?
Absolutely. So I'm always happy to connect on LinkedIn. I try to do my best to share kind of reflections, kind of post of engagement of things that I'm just kind of doing in higher education in a variety of community spaces. So always welcome a reach out there. And then definitely on the X platform at Dr. Absolute Zero. I always give the preface that when if you follow me kind of there, it's the variety of me as a whole self. So I tweet higher education things, I tweet pop culture things, music, all of the gamut, right? So it's the full, again, full holistic perspective. And then always happy to kind of connect kind of ongoing through messaging, right? So I think LinkedIn Messenger has a great piece. If people have an interest in connecting one-on-one to kind of just talk, chat more and kind of engage, always happy to do so.
And we will include all of that information of where they can find you, Kelvin, on our show notes. So I thank our listeners for joining us for another episode of Busy Research. Check out the show notes for more information about Dr. Rutledge. I also encourage you all to check out the Center for Applied Business Research at Austin Peay State University. Stay curious and stay busy.